Okay, so ready for a deep dive into like a real hidden history mystery.
Yeah, definitely.
This one's, I mean, it's got it all. A forgotten filmmaker, some really unexpected twists, and like a whole lot of resilience.
A wild ride, that's for sure.
Right. And speaking of wild rides, did I mention the house fire?
Oh yeah, almost forgot about the house fire.
Right. Like seriously, this is like straight out of a movie. Imagine like precious film reels almost vanishing in flames.
Talk about archival nightmares
It's
for a living.
seriously, right. So how did these films even survive? Like what saved them from becoming like ash in history?
Okay, so picture this. It's the grandson, right? Her grandson, Patrick Harrison. He just happens to work at, get this, the Library of Congress.
What are the chances?
Seriously. And he had borrowed some of her films like way before the fire, so boom, saved.
Wow. Talk about being in the right place at the right time. Okay, but why were these films like so special? What's the big deal about Eloise Gist in the grand scheme of film?
So at first glance, they might have looked like, I don't know, any other old home movies, right? Just gathering dust in an attic somewhere. But when archivists at the Library of Congress actually got their hands on them, they realized they had stumbled onto something pretty big. Like, this was a whole hidden chapter of black cinema.
Wow. Okay, so we've got intrigue, we've got mystery, we're talking about the 1920s here, right? So like paint us a picture. Who is Eloise Gist? Was she like rubbing shoulders with the Hollywood elite back in the day?
Not quite. Her story is, it's not your typical Hollywood story. Think 1920s Washington, D.C. It was booming with black artists and thinkers. And in the middle of it all, you've got Eloise. She was a beautician running her own successful salon.
Okay, so not exactly the Hollywood starlet we might have pictured.
Right. But here's the thing, Eloise, she wasn't just styling hair, right? This woman was staging these really elaborate graduation ceremonies for her students. At the Lincoln Theater, no less. That was a big deal for black performers back then.
Hold on. Elaborate graduation ceremonies for beauticians. It's like that sounds a little extra, even for a go-getter.
And she was a go-getter, for sure. She even wrote and put on a whole play, The Trinity of Beauty, as part of these events. I mean, talk about dedication.
Okay, so maybe go-getter is an understatement. I mean, she sounds like a natural-born storyteller.
Exactly. And that drive, that need to create, it definitely foreshadowed her jump into filmmaking.
It's like she was practically directing before she even touched a camera.
Right. But we also can't forget, this was the 1920s. And being a woman, let alone a black woman, trying to break into filmmaking, talk about an uphill battle.
Yeah, definitely not an easy path. So how did she do it? How did she go from beauty salon to behind the camera?
It's part of what makes her story so fascinating. And get this, she was also a single mother, so she was challenging societal norms on like every level.
Wow, talk about a trailblazer.
Yeah.
So she's running a business, raising a family, and still finds time to chase her filmmaking dreams. That's amazing.
It really is. Her story is so intertwined with the black community, with her entrepreneurial spirit, and just this incredible artistic drive.
So how does Hellbound Train fit into all of this? That was her claim to fame.
Kind of, yeah. But it's not as simple as you might think. Hellbound Train, it came out in 1930 and it's silent.
Silent film, huh? Okay, so we're going way back.
Yeah, but silent doesn't mean it doesn't pack a punch, you know? It's a cinematic sermon, basically, reflecting this, I don't know, fire and brimstone style of preaching that was like everywhere in some black Christian communities back then.
Okay, so I'm picturing those old-time revivals, right? With the passionate preachers, that intense energy.
Exactly. And the film captures that same intensity, even without spoken dialogue.
How'd they do that? I mean, how do you convey all that emotion without words?
They use these really powerful title cards. Just imagine. The film opens with this stark white text on black. The hellbound train is always on duty, and the devil is engineer. Chills, right?
Oh, yeah. That's intense.
And then it goes on like, no round trip tickets, one way only, with Satan listed as the manager.
Okay, yeah, I can see how that would leave an impression even without any spoken words.
And it wasn't just for shock value. These messages, these title cards talking about dancing is the first coach, there's room in hell for bootleggers and their followers, they reflected a very real anxiety about morality, about sin in the black community at the time. The Great Migration was happening, times were changing fast. And these messages, for some people, it was a way to hold on to order, you know, in a world that felt chaotic.
So it's like the films, they're more than just entertainment. They're capturing a whole moment in time, a whole set of beliefs and anxieties.
Exactly. It reminds us that films are products of their time. And for Hellbound Train, it was part of a whole experience, not just a movie you watched.
Oh, What do you mean? Like, was it interactive or something?
Think of it this way. Alois's husband, James Gist, was a traveling preacher, right? So he'd incorporate the film into his sermons. So you've got the music, you've got the preaching, and then bam, the hellbound train rolls onto the screen.
A cinematic sermon on the rails. I love it. It's like you can almost feel the energy just thinking about it.
Right. But remember how we mentioned James Gist? Well, his name's on the film, but Alois's fingerprints, they're all over it. Subtle at first, but as you watch more, it becomes impossible to ignore her influence.
Okay, so now we're getting to the really good stuff, right?
Yeah.
The mystery of Alois's influence, how her voice starts to emerge.
Exactly, and let me tell you, those later films, they paint a very different picture than the fire and brimstone of Hellbound Train.
So we left off with, like, hints of Alois's influence starting to, you know, really come through, moving away from that whole, like, fire and brimstone vibe of Hellbound Train. What happens next?
Okay, so this is where things get super interesting. 1933, they release Verdict Not Guilty. And it is a huge departure from Hellbound Train.
Verdict Not Guilty.
Mm.
Okay, that sounds a little like, I don't know, courtroom drama, but maybe with a twist.
Right. So it's about this woman, and she's on trial. And the things they're accusing her of, like having a child out of wedlock, missing church, playing cards, you know, scandalous stuff for the 1930s.
Yeah, that's like seriously frowned upon back then, especially for a woman.
Exactly. Social expectations were no joke.
So what's the verdict? Does she like get the Hellbound Train treatment?
Here's where Alois's influence really shines through. Despite everything, the film takes this turn towards forgiveness. There's even a title card with a quote from the Gospel of John. You know, the truth will set you free. And guess what?
She's found not guilty.
Not guilty.
Wow, that's powerful. It's like a direct challenge to the whole message of Hellbound Train Trial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Alois being a single mom herself, you have to wonder if she related to this woman, you know? Like she wanted to challenge those double standards.
It's hard to say for sure, but you're picking up what I'm putting down. Alois was living through that, those judgments, those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is putting a story out there that just flips the script.
Totally. It's a good reminder that filmmakers, even back then, they could still find ways to, like, subvert expectations, make their voices heard. So we see this shift towards forgiveness, this empathy. What about their next film, Heaven Bound Travelers?
Okay, so Heaven Bound Travelers, this one comes out in 1935. And with this one, Alois's daughter actually confirmed that Alois was, like, super hands-on, rewriting, editing, directing.
Wow, really? So she's not just involved, she's basically running the show.
Exactly. And Heaven Bound Travelers, it really showcases her empathy, her understanding of social dynamics. The film's only about 15 minutes long, but it's got all these different storylines woven together, and every one of them, women facing tough situations, but they handle it with grace, with strength. Alois herself, she plays a wife who's falsely accused of cheating by her, like, crazy jealous husband.
It's like she's using these stories to explore what it meant to be a woman, specifically a black woman, in a time when they weren't often given a voice.
Exactly. And that's what makes Alois just so important. She wasn't just making movies, you know. She's creating these nuanced, complex portrayals of black womanhood. And she was doing it on her own terms.
It's amazing how film can do that, right?
Right.
Challenge our perspectives, make us see the world through someone else's eyes.
Yeah.
But before we get too caught up in the artistry of it all, let's go back to the archives for a minute. We know the films were almost lost in that fire, and then they were basically forgotten for decades. So how did they go from almost gone to being recognized as, like, these cinematic treasures?
Honestly, it's a story of pure luck, some serious dedication, and just a touch of, like, detective work. Remember Patrick Harrison, Alois's grandson, who borrowed the films?
Yeah, the Library of Congress connection.
Right. So in 1974, he actually loaned the films to a film archivist there, which is how they ended up being preserved in the first place. Talk about a lucky break.
Totally. But even at the Library of Congress, I imagine it still took some time for people to realize what they had, right?
Oh, yeah. At first, they were just seen as these amateur home movies. Nobody really understood how important Alois's role was. Plus, archival work. It's slow, it's meticulous, there's only so much time and resources. It's not like the movies were going to restore themselves.
It really makes you think about all the other stories, the films, the voices, that are probably still out there, hidden away in some archive, just waiting to be rediscovered. So the GIST films, they're safe and sound, but still kind of under the radar at this point, right? What changed? What took them from forgotten to, you know, finally getting the recognition they deserved?
Well, it's like a perfect storm of events, really. In the early 90s, a junior fellow at the Library of Congress, Kimberly McCall, she gets intrigued by the Gist collection.
Okay.
She's digging through everything, old letters between James Gist and the NAACP, really trying to understand the world these films were made in.
It's crazy how those little details, a letter, a photo, can suddenly make everything come alive, you know?
Totally. And for McCall, one of her biggest breakthroughs came from a conversation, a firsthand account that changed everything.
Okay, now you have to tell me who she talked to.
Eloise's daughter, Homa Zell Harrison. And Harrison sets the record straight about her mother's role.
Oh, this is big. I can feel it.
Eloise wasn't just helping out. Harrison makes it clear she was rewriting, editing, directing Verdict Not Guilty, Heaven Bound Travelers. She was the driving force.
Wow. Talk about a revelation.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder how many other women, especially Black women in filmmaking, how many of their stories have we just, I don't know, lost track of over the years?
It's a good question. And it highlights how crucial it is to really dig deep, look beyond the surface. In Eloise's case, this one conversation, it changes everything. Suddenly, the Library of Congress, they're looking at these films in a whole new light.
I bet. But even then, it's still got to be a long road, right? I mean, actually piecing those films back together, getting them ready for an audience.
Oh, absolutely. Archival work is slow and painstaking, but people were invested in this story. In 1992, a Library of Congress fellow, Amy Kale Petrine, she made it her mission to save these films. Hundreds of fragments, just a jumbled mess. Can you imagine?
That sounds like, I don't even know where you'd begin. How did she even know what went with what?
It took serious dedication. And then she starts noticing these little things, visual clues, that these reels, they weren't in any order. And then the aha moment.
Okay. Okay. Tell me.
Mixed in with Hellbound Train were chunks of Verdict Not Guilty and Heaven Bound Travelers.
No way. It's like those missing pieces of a puzzle suddenly appearing out of thin air. That's incredible.
It was a game changer. That discovery, plus knowing how central Eloise was, that's what really got the ball rolling. People were finally starting to understand the importance of what she had accomplished.
So what happened next? Did they finally get their time to shine?
They did. In 2000, Hellbound Train was fully restored, thanks to a grant to the Library of Congress. And since then, all three films, they've been preserved, digitized, and they're out there for anyone to see.
What a journey. From almost being lost forever to, you know, being celebrated for what they are. These amazing pieces of film history. Eloise Gist's story, it really shows you how important it is to preserve these voices, these stories from the past. And it makes you think, what else is still out there? Just waiting for someone to discover it.
Right. That's the beauty of archival work. You never know what you're going to find. Every box, every film reel, it could be the key to unlocking some hidden chapter of history.
It's a good reminder to never stop digging. Never stop asking questions. Who knows? Maybe one of our listeners will be the one to uncover the next Eloise Gist.